Mr. Keeler, Reel 3. We were talking about the working up trials, sea trials.
Yes.
And what about your time when you were on duty, actually on the bridge, on lookout? What did that involve?
Well, there were two of you, one either side of the bridge, with glasses around your neck, with a duffel coat on, and it was up to you to scan a certain area of the ocean, right? And I say, I think that sometimes we had four men on the bridge, not initially, but we did after a while have four men up on the bridge, depending what the situation was, what sort of convoy it was, where you were going, what you were doing.
We'll come to that, because we'll look at it, because this is early days,
yeah.
Right? So you just looked at this, did you find that tiring, just scanning this sector?
It was tiring, but, I was young, and today I couldn't do it, obviously, but no, it was tiring, very tiring.
And what about the binoculars? Were you good?
They were very good binoculars. I can't remember what the size of them was, but they were very, very heavy, and we each had one pair each, which, when your relief came, you'd hand your binoculars over to him, and then you'd go down to the kibbutz for your hour off.
And what about when you were at masthead?
At masthead,
when was that?
That was up the mast, obviously.
But when would that be a separate job, or was that just a different turn?
When you used to go on watch, one of you was always detailed off to do masthead. So one of the four of you in the kibbutz had to go up the masthead and climb up and relieve the man in the masthead. And again up there, you were up there for an hour, and you sit just with a pair of glasses and scan the sea. It's as simple as that. For any objects, or if you're in convoy, of course, you obviously look to the other ships.
Now, anything else about the working up trials?
Not as far as I can remember, except that when we went to Bermuda.
Well, let's look at Bermuda, because that was to Georgetown, St. George Harbour, Bermuda.
Yes, Bermuda, yes.
And
Hamilton, Bermuda, the town.
And what do you remember of the working up trials there?
Well, we used to go to sea every day, and again, used to go through gunnery drill, and obviously had their drills as well. Everybody had to do their working up, to what the job was going to be. And what the job was going to entail when we got to sea four times. We also exercised abandoned ship on Christmas Day, 1943. Everybody abandoned ship, everybody over the side, which is something very memorable, which I remember very well.
What do you remember of it? Because it does have an obvious point as to what happened to the
Colonel. Oh, you just had to jump over the side, abandoned ship. Everybody abandoned ship. I mean, the officers stayed on board, obviously. Some of the petty officers, but the crew basically abandoned ship. And you went to your abandoned ship station and got over the side.
Where was yours?
My abandoned ship station was on the farther side of the Kali raft. But we didn't put the raft into the water for our abandoned ship station. And we just went into the water, that was all. Just get the feeling of being in the water, that was all.
Was it how high was it to jump that, hard, it's quite high up.
It wasn't too bad. No, not on board the bottom. If you just had to get over the side in the water, that's what they wanted you to do. Abandon ship, get over the side, get wet,
And did everybody do that?
Oh, everybody had to do it. Everybody had to do it, yeah.
And what about the other exercises?
Again, it was gunnery, sea trials again.
What would the gunnery exercises be like? Because you'd be involved in that if you're on B turret, B gun.
Again, firing the gun really, keeping the racks filled up with shells. Just generally, what we were to do.
Well, where were the racks of shells in relation to the gun? And how was the system?
Behind the gun, to the left and the right of the kibbutz. The shells were kept there, but they also came up from down below as well if you ran short. There was to pass them up through the deck, to reload reload the lockers.
So they'd be kept, for instant use, were in lockers.
In lockers.
If you were in action, you'd have to call for more. How would you call for them all?
Well, by telephone. The down lower, chain above, had earphones on. To talk to the bridge or whatever to say what you wanted to do.
Were there any empty flash precautions to prevent a spark going down?
No, not as I remember.
Were you familiar with the magazine and things like that, where it was and the arrangements down there?
Well, I knew where it was, but I mean, I didn't, apart from going and seeing it, that was all, no. My basic job was moving the shells from the racks into the gun.
How far was that?
Really, not much farther from me to you.
So, about a yard, 4 feet?
Yeah, 4 feet.
And with the gunnery exercises, what were you firing at? You see what I mean?
Well, a tug would tow a target. A tug would tow a target. And it was up to you to fire the target that would fire the target. But that wasn't my department. I used to just do the loading numbers.
You weren't that concerned. Was there any sort of practice in rapid fire, you know, to get up the rate of fire?
Not really. I can't remember how many rounds we had to fire, but we did have to fire a certain number. So I can't honestly remember how many we fired.
And were you at this point aware of any problems with the 3-inch gun?
No, not really. No, it was a good, reliable gun. And
was it used in an anti-aircraft role at all, or could it be?
Well, it could be, but the Oricon guns were the ones that were used for anti-aircraft.
And you didn't go on those?
No.
What about the depth charges?
I did have to fire them, you know, as exercise, but I didn't. I wasn't one of my duties on the Oricon. You know, the gunnery rating is to do the Oricon.
But you practiced it.
You had to practice to know what to do.
What was it like to fire?
Juddery, very juddery. You know, you used to have a shoulder thing on your shoulders. It was very juddery to fire, and noisy as well, you know. But as I said, my basic thing was lookout and also gunnery, and there's a 3-inch gun.
And anything else about you?
I got put in the boaster's party on board the ship. The boaster's party goes around repairing, you know. You go around in the boaster, which is usually a petty officer, and you're in his party, and you have to do splicing, you have to repair boats, anything that gets broken, lanyards, anything gets broken, you have to repair them, either with wire ropes and splicing, or with ordinary ropes, you know. So that was my job on board, was in the boaster's party.
Well, now, how did the day run then? So, if you're on watch, I'm thinking of when you do.
That sort of work we do down in the morning, in the forenoon, and, working parties, you know, like putting a bit of paint on the ship at sea or whatever. We basically paid it was done in harbour, but at sea there was obviously a certain amount to do, and that's when you used to do the work.
What about cleaning ship? Would you be excused that? Would that mean that you'd be with the bosun's party rather than doing...
With the bosun's party, yeah.
What was cleaning ship when you did do it?
Just cleaning the decks there, and that's all getting rid of...
How? I mean, were they scrubbing?
Hose pipes. Salt water hose pipes.
So it wasn't any particular scrubbing or...
No. There were scrubbers, you know, to any laying in the bilges, you know, to scrub out.
What about polishing or any...
Well, there was polishing to be done. In the wheelhouse, you had to do the brass work in the wheelhouse. There was no brass work on our gun. It was painted. But in the wheelhouse, there was a brass work, obviously, on the wheel and also on the capstan. On the... what do they call it? It's on the capstan.
All right.
Where the compass was,
yeah.
That was all brass, obviously had brass and brass. Now again, I was also a quartermaster as well. A quartermaster takes the wheel at sea. So in addition to my watchkeeping as a lookout, I also used to have to do quartermaster duties. How this used to work out, I really can't remember. But there were times when I used to have to do quartermaster duty. Take the wheel at sea.
Now, what did that involve?
Well, again, you used to stay in your caboose and then go up when you used to change over. You didn't go to the bridge, you went to the wheelhouse, but you took the wheel. Off the man was on the wheel, he'd tell you what course you were steering, and then you'd report to the bridge, over Stephen Keel on the wheel, or older Stephen Keel on the wheel, and they used to give the course to the officer of the watch.
And What was it like, the wheel? I mean, people have no idea what it was like to take the wheel of a ship now. I mean,
the wheel on the boat, I mean, the wheels today are very small, but the wheel on the boat was fairly big, you know, sort of about this width in the hand. And
Two or three feet across.
Yeah. It wasn't huge, but it wasn't small.
And how did you actually follow the course?
Well, on the compass. The officer to watch you on duty on the bridge said, steer 390 or steer whatever, you know, and you ought to bring this train to whatever course it was.
Did you have any special training for it, or...?
Only on board the boom. Only on the boom. That's where I learnt. Quartermaster job was a job I used to enjoy. You felt you were more involved in the running of the ship, you know? And I was pleased to get on to being a quartermaster. Although I was a boatswain's mate. I was called a boatswain's mate. And I was on quartermaster duties, whereas you took the wheel at sea.
Now, what about... The officers and senior personnel. Now your skipper was it Parrish?
Yes,
right through.
Lieutenant Commander Parrish. Well, he was a lieutenant on board the Bullet, but after they die, after they move up a rank, they become a lieutenant commander. Lieutenant Commander Anthony Heron, H-E-R-O-N, Heron Parrish, B-A-R-I-S-H, R-N. Royal Navy.
And what was he like as a bloke?
He was very short. He was he wasn't a hard. He was a potter captain. He liked the discipline. He liked to believe in things to be done right. He was an awfully nice man. Otherwise, he was strict. He was very small. We used to class him as being a bit like Nelson, you know, being small.
And. What about some of the other officers?
There were four officers altogether. One was a navigating officer who was Lieutenant Wynne Stanley. He was RNR. In other words, he'd been at sea in the Merchant Navy, I believe, RNR. There was Royal Navy, RNVR, Royal Naval Volunteer Reserve. There were also midshipmen, RN. And there were also RNR officers who were usually come to the Merchant Navy. Lieutenant Winston, it was RNR. And he was a navigating officer. And he was a brilliant navigating officer and a wonderful, lovely man.
And
you don't want that what happened after that
day. No, we'll and
he was an awfully nice man. And he always used to intrigue us. When we used to go, we went to Newfoundland several trips, and he could always take us into the entrance of Newfoundland Harbour. Even in thick fog, there's been a lot of fog on the Newfoundland trip, and he could always take us right into the entrance of the harbour between two big areas of land, and we used to come out of the fog right into the entrance of the harbour. It was a brilliant navigating officer, he really was. Used to amaze us.
And the First Lieutenant.
He was so kind.
Who?
First Lieutenant, we had a couple of First Lieutenants. One that I mentioned just now said, another man take his place, he was RN, I can't remember his name, but he didn't stay with us that long, he left. And we had another first lieutenant called Daniels, again RN, Royal Navy.
What was he like?
Again, a nice man. He was tough, but he was nice man. First lieutenants could be notorious sometimes, you know. The coxswain, of course, who is next to the officer, they're always bit notorious as well. Because
and who was your coxswain?
Braddock, his name was Braddock.
What was he like?
Would you like to see a photograph of
him? They can't see, but I'll see it later, yeah. What was he like?
He was a very cocky man, very cocky. He used to bully us. We were what they call HOs, hospitals only. We weren't full-time Navy. And us younger men, he used to bully us a bit, you know. Always chasing us.
Any of the other petty officers or leading seamen?
Well, we had several. Still petty officers, obviously. Again, seamen, petty officers. They were all very nice, very pleasant. Again, they were mainly hospitallers only. But some of them had been in the war before, but not as RN, as volunteers.
And did you have any particular pals on board at that time, earlier days?
Yes, I did. I had a chap called Nobby Hall, who was in my mess. And, yes, he was in my mess. He was my great friend. We used to get around the shore together.
And what was it that particularly liked about him? You know, why did you decide?
Well, he was a workshop in Nottinghamshire. He was a miner. He was a very quiet, very dour chap. And maybe it was being quieter attracting me to him, I don't know. But we used to get on fine. You know, I was country boy, he was a miner, country lad, you know. And he was my main pal on board.
Any others, you know?
Well, Freddie was all of them in AMS, you know, they were already quarrelling or arguing, but he was my main one of having a run ashore with, shall we say. Especially when we got back into England, because he used to come to my home with me.
Now, anything else about the exercises at Hamilton and Bermuda, you recall?
No, it was just general learning the ship, really, that's all it was.
And what about getting ashore? Because it's not a bad place to go ashore. Did you get ashore at all?
No, I didn't actually go ashore. I did go ashore as a working party to saw a ship, pick up food, pick up vegetables or whatever. So I never actually had runs ashore there. No, I never went ashore.
How was that done? Where would you pick it up from?
From the local store, from the naval stores there.
And do you know how was it organised?
No, I really can't tell you.
No,
the petty officer in charge of the stores used to go with you and pick what he wanted, either vegetables or fruit or whatever he wanted, and it was up to us to transport it back on board, the store ship.
Now, what happened next then? You'd presumably, you'd finished your working up trials.
From there, we went and picked up a convoy and came back to Belfast. That was our first convoy.
That would be the convoy HX274.
That was the first one.
Now, what was convoy duty like then? Let's start.
Convoy duty like you could have any number of ships. Sometimes you had small convoys, sometimes you had large convoys. But I'm not going to be able to say the name and number of every convoy, because we did a lot of convoying, right? We were always what we used to call the gas ship. Lieutenant at the time, Parrish, was the junior officer of our flotilla, right? That was a flotilla of five ships. And he was always a junior officer, and so we used to get the guest jobs. If anything straggler would drop behind for the convoy, it was us to go back to chase them up, like herding up sheep, you know? We always used to get what we used to call the guest jobs, you know? And we used to get the unpleasant jobs. We never used to keep a straight convoy all the time. We used to nip about the convoy a lot, you know.
And what was it like on convoy duty?
Well, it used to get a bit boring sometimes, when it was basically what's keeping. Again, when you join a convoy, there's always signals to pass between the escort vessels and the merchant ships. You had to go around all the ships. Each escort vessel had to do so many, and we used to go around delivering the signals in a tube, you know? The signals of what the convoy course was going to be, destination, etc., etc. That was never done over the radio. It was always done manually by escort vessels. And again, I was used to get on that job a lot because I only used to throw a good heaving line. And it was I used to throw the heaving line and then pass the message over, you know, and then bring the canister back. But you had to go in every ship in the convoy and deliver the sailing orders, whether you were sailing from America or Liverpool, or wherever you were sailing from. You always had to go in and deliver all these messages. And we did that for the whole time we were U-boat hunting in convoy. When you say U-boat hunting, you are obviously looking at the U-boats as well. And if anyone was a U-boat was mentioned to be off, somebody spotted the U-boat, you had to go and investigate it, you know. Bruin could never claim, I say so myself, to having sold a U-boat. We always thought we got two probables, drop and depth charges and debris coming up, oil coming up. But we never had a confirmed sinking. So we had two convoys, that was the only ones we had.
Now, you the first convoy went to Belfast, then you were you based at Belfast?
Yeah, well, again, there, we were the American Butcher, as you know, and we then had to have things done to us, i.e. change over. We changed over from canteen messing to general messing, for one thing. That meant all the gales were ripped out and all the new ranges put in, you know, a completely different type of messing for feeding the crew. And also, of course, we had other guns added as well, as I remember. And we also picked up some gear, which we sold off, trailing behind the ship to stop acoustic torpedoes hitting the ship. That was another thing we had. We generally took the American, de-Americanized them, and made them into British ships, you know?
And how did
there was obviously repairs to do as well from being at sea.
How did you feel about the introduction of the Royal Naval message?
Well, we weren't very happy about it because obviously canteen messing was a better form of messing. Because general messing, they used to go to the petty officer and supply petty officer and get your food and prepare it yourself in the mess. If it was going to be steak or stew or whatever, you had to prepare it, all your vegetables, peel your potatoes, cabbage, prepare everything in your mess and take it up to the galley for the chef to cook. And when the chef, when it was cooked, you used to have to go up to collect it, you know, and bring it down to your mess where you used to eat your food. So that was the difference in canteen messing and general messing.
So you didn't like it?
We didn't live so well. But of course, seasickness came into this as well eventually, because the more time you spent at sea, the more sick I was. I was a terrible one for being sick, but I never shirked my duties. I always kept my watches. I always did my duties.
How bad was it, the seasickness?
The seasickness, my friend, we were based at Liverpool for quite a while, and in Liverpool, when you were in Gladstone Dock, where our dock was, we had to be going into the lock to get out into the River Mersey. And we used to go into the lock, and as we were going into the lock, you were pumped up or down, depending on the tide, and the sea would stand on the guardrail, throwing up the fear of going to sea. But, I mean, that did pass after a while. You know, once you got to sea, and it depends on the weather, really, if the sea was rough or calm, but I was always very prone to seasickness.
They had a reputation for rolling.
Rolling, terrible, terrible. They used to roll in every direction there was because they were very light. They weren't like the riveted ships, the heavy ships, they were very light.
But you basically, you had this refit at Belfast.
At Belfast, right.
And then what happened then?
And then we went to Liverpool.
That's where you were based, was it? Was that where you stayed based during 1944?
Liverpool was our base, basically, after Londonderry and Belfast. But Londonderry and Belfast were ports we used to go into for a quick turnaround, you know. We used to love to be sent into Liverpool, obviously, because you got a longer time there and a better one ashore. Belfast and London, they were nice to go ashore, but they weren't as good as Liverpool was our home port. But all the scouts on board used to like to get to Liverpool to get up home. You know?
And that's where effectively we were based throughout '44 until you were sunk. Tell me about trips ashore at Liverpool.
Well, trips ashore, I honestly don't remember much about them, quite honestly. I started drinking by then, come on the floor, and it was fun to get into a pub and have a sing song or whatever, you know, just the usual, that runs the show, you know.
Girls
involved as far as I was concerned.
Whereabouts in Liverpool would you go? Were there any particular halls?
Something else we haven't. Did I mention before when we were in Boston, I was on Shorbashaw, yes I did, yes. Right.
Yeah.
In Liverpool, I avoided going on the short patrol in Liverpool, but they were haunts, yes, different bars used to collect the different bars, the wood bar in, and I can't remember, but we used to meet up in various bars. And that was
how did you get on with the Scousers, the Liverpoolians?
Well, Liverpool, once you got near Liverpool, the Scousers used to change. They used to become, you know, looking ahead across the horizon to see the land, you know, Liverpool. They always used to say they used to become different people since the last boys down south, you know.
And how did you get on with the civilians?
I got on pretty well with everybody. I'm a very easygoing, placid, easygoing. I didn't get involved in fights and things like that. I used to have a quite a normal temperament, and it didn't used to worry me.
Now, I see you're attached to 19th Escort Group in October 1944, but what were you before that?
I can't remember. I honestly can't remember. So we were always attached to an escort group. But I don't remember. My team was the last one we were in, which I remember very well.
Now, what were you doing between sort of... You were refitted in round about January in Belfast, and you went to Liverpool.
Well,
what were you doing across that year?
We used to do runs across the Atlantic. We used to go across the Atlantic. Sometimes didn't go ashore. We used to pick up a convoy, turn in, and come back again. That was 5 or 6 days out, 5 or 6 days back again. Sometimes longer, depending on the weather. Depending what job you had, you know, whether you were staying with Australia or whatever, you know. But we did go to Newfoundland several times, as I said, where medical officers used to negotiate getting into the, in between the harbour entrance there. We did go into Newfoundland several times.
What was the weather like?
pretty rough. It was very rough, very rough.
Because they're not big ships, are they?
And another run we used to get as well was Iceland as well. We used to do there was always a monthly ship to go to, a merchant ship to relieve the people on Iceland, because Iceland was occupied by us, you know, to stop the Germans coming in. And we used to be used to escort the supply ship there. That was usually one merchant ship and us. And we used to escort that. But I never went ashore in Iceland. Some of the lads used to have a chance of running ashore, but I never used to go.
And what was it like in bad weather? I mean, you weren't a great sailor anyway.
No, I wasn't a great sailor. It was frightening. You know, sometimes when we were in that kabush, off lookout, behind V gun, as the ship rolled, the bows dug in, and she rolled left and right. Sometimes the bows would dig in, and the water would come up round over the front of the ship. And we said, my God, we're not coming up this time. You know, you can hear the water swishing around us. We have watertight clips on the doors. We're not coming up this time. We really sometimes thought we wouldn't come up again, you know. And then we used to come out of it again. And, my God, you know, we're still here. But it was very rough. It was very rough. Not only digging in, but also rolling side to side.
And what about... What did you think of the sort of food you had day by day once you'd gone on to general mess?
It was wholesome, and it depends. It was cook of the mess, really. Every day you had a cook of the mess. And it depends who did the cook of the mess, how they prepared the food. And again, also with me, to how if you were seasick or not, if you wanted food or not, you know.
What sort of meals would you... I mean, did you ever do cook of the mess?
I had to take my turn, yes.
What would you do? What sort of meals would you prepare?
What's the potatoes and what's the cabbage and things like that, you know? Again, it was very primitive, you know, to sit at a fanny, we used to call them, yes, fanny, preparing the food. It was very basic.
Did they have any of the old sailors' meals where they do roly-poly pudding and proper pies and all the rest of it? I mean,
that was up to us in the mess. If we wanted to do it, if we had somebody in our mess who could do a roly-poly or a pie, we used to get one. We didn't get one.
And could you do it?
No, I didn't.
So what would you prepare?
I would just basically do potatoes and vegetables and meat and things like that, you know. We obviously tried to do little bits and pieces, you know, to make things a bit more edible. But